Great to have everyone here. Firstly, greetings of the season. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays for everyone. I hope you had a great weekend. So now back to the stars. Hey, Mo.
Hello, Paul. Hello, Naman, and season's greetings to all. And we're still in holiday mode here in Australia. I hope it never ends.
I completely concur. So it was, yesterday was Christmas, and unfortunately for a lot of places, it fell on because of the Sunday thing. I think a lot of people lost the holiday, though. I think many, many places gave a compensatory off today. That could possibly explain your continual holiday mode now, Mo. But yesterday was also an important day, which in space history, space exploration history. It was the first anniversary of the launch of the James Webb Space Telescope. So I thought it might be appropriate to discuss something very crazy about the telescope, which I think over the last few calls we have touched upon a little here and there, but we've never got into in great detail. So just an overview as to how, at least how it's kind of intrigued quite a few people who weren't too familiar with it even before the launch. So the James Webb Telescope was launched on the 25th of December. And after it was launched, it was a great successful launch from the French Guiana, from the Ariane, by the Ariane spacecraft rocket. But the immediate news after that was you would be you the success of the launch would be felt 30 days later, nearly a month later. And the reason for that was the spacecraft, the telescope, was heading towards a point which was far away. I mean, really, really far away. I think that's the farthest we've ever placed anything in orbit for off the Earth. And this was a point which is called the Lagrange point, the L2 Lagrange point. And it was a mind-boggling 1.5 million kilometers away from the Earth, which is like what, four times the distance between the Earth and the Moon. And what was significant about this was the nature of that point. And it's not something we have had in the news for, ever. I mean, it wasn't it I think it pretty much put the Lagrange points on the map, this particular launch. And if you dig a little deeper, and I didn't know that this was actually something which has been happening for quite some time. There are a lot of missions which have been using the Lagrange points for their launches because of a very specific nature which they exhibit. So I thought we'll have a conversation on this, and obviously we're not going to go into the science of it because it's fairly complicated for any conversation, let alone a amateur astronomer conversation here.
Oh, come on. What's a little gravitational mechanics?
Fair enough. So let's get Naman on the call, and let's have Naman talk about this. So Naman, over to you. Naman, by
Yes,
the way,
sir.
just an intro. Naman is part of the Cosmofluencer team, and he's a student of aerospace engineering who is totally passionate about astronomy. And I think Naman, just a few words about yourself before you tell us what the Lagrange points are, and in Mohs' words, for a little bit of gravitational science for all of us.
Yep, so I'm Naman, and I've been into astronomy since around 5 or 6 years from now. Have been digging into science from third standard. And yeah, science is awesome.
Good to know. So yeah, Naman. So I think just to set context, this requires a lot of illustrative examples. So I'm just putting
Correct.
a link of the image of the Lagrange point mapping. So in case anyone wants to just check it out, because that would help in the explanations, which I mean the conversations which we have after this. So yeah, Naman. So what is this Lagrange point, and I mean what are the Lagrange points, and what is this three body problem about?
So if we go into the definition, Lagrange points would be some points or locations in space where gravitational forces and orbital motion of a body balances each other. And that is like too deep into what we can say a normal someone who is not passionate would
So,
understand.
Naman, I would like to take a crack at explaining this in a simple way. And yes, I think one common example that everyone can relate to is finding the center of gravity of an object. So if you've ever tried to balance a pencil or a pen on your finger, just like that, you would find that you would have to move it left and right until you reach a point where, you know, the weight on the left-hand side balances the weight on the right-hand side. So this is an oversimplified explanation of what the Lagrange point is, but it's essentially a place where if you placed a spacecraft, its movement, its own orbital movement, which is like a centripetal force, and then the gravitational forces of large celestial objects such as the Earth and the Sun and the Moon, they all balance each other out at that point. So it's like finding the center of gravity. So whatever you put over there tends to stay there. And that reduces the amount of fuel that you would need to spend and carry in order to maintain the spacecraft in that position.
Yes, so that would... What we call it is parking spots for the satellites. So you don't need fuel for maintaining or remaining in the fixed position. So, yep, that nice. Would be Lagrange points.
That's a pretty nice explanation, Mohan. And I think that kind of illustrates it. And the fact that... Naman, I'm assuming that's one of the huge advantages, right? You don't need to... Yes. There's no corrective... there's no corrective action to be taken once put in orbit there because of the cancellation of all the forces involved.
Correct. So if we talk about these points, first of all, it was like discovered by Lagrange, Joseph Louis Lagrange, and yep, he used some math and discovered these points. And also, some of these points would be stable and some of them would be unstable.
Mm-hmm. So that's the second point, right? That there are five points here. So, if we see the... by the way, hi, Amitabh.
I joined. My cats were like, say... kept me engaged. Yeah, I'm here now. So, the interesting thing about Lagrange points, they are natural Lagrange points. Like Jupiter have that asteroid in the same orbit Jupiter is going around the Sun. And so there are the asteroids are accumulated there. They got Trojan asteroids. So these asteroids, like say the one group is following Jupiter, ahead of Jupiter, some are following Jupiter. So this happened in nature also. So,
right.
Now we're using this. Like actually, someone else discovered this L1, L2, L3, L4 and L5 discovered the Lagrange. He developed whole mathematics for it.
Correct.
Right. Yeah. Naman, you were adding something?
Yes. So, as Amitabh said that there are these points, Lagrange points of Jupiter. So, they have these Trojan asteroids, what we can say. And... those Lagrange points are like one of the reasons we live, because if that asteroids are they get lost in space, they might crash on Earth and also create something which is not habitable.
So you're saying they're a natural trap for these asteroids which could potentially harm Earth?
Correct.
Okay.
It's so beautiful, isn't it? I mean,
yeah.
How many accidents needed to occur for a solar system to form that is just perfect, the only solar system that we know that is actually hosting life. But because we don't know enough, I don't think we can say for certain that we're the only species, because I'm sure this beautiful accident has occurred trillions of times over, possibly in our galaxy alone.
Yeah, and there's an added point to that, right? Ultimately, this life as we know it is a blip in the entire timeline, right? So this accident this accident could be very short-lived just by virtue of all these other things which are happening.
Exactly, right? And even in the cosmological timescale, like, do we really understand what the lifespan of an orbital system, a solar system is? I would assume it would not be longer than the life of the host star. So essentially, once that star supernovas or turns into a red giant or whatever, it's basically bye-bye to that solar system. So it's a constant state of flux. It's a completely random thing. They're being created, they're being destroyed, but it's a mere blink of an eye in the cosmological timescale.
Yeah. And just one more thing on what, something which Naman had said, when you were talking about the forces canceling out, if you look at the the force diagrams of the Lagrange points. I'm using some terms here, but if you look at those diagrams, right, you have the contours of the forces which are shown there. It actually looks like a swirl in a, you know, you put soap in water and you see the way the things move around. And those are so fleeting at the end of the day, right? So you're talking about these forces existing because certain bodies are present in certain places in space. And a small shift of one of them could affect all those forces quite drastically. And that could change everything.
Exactly. And even if you consider like how orbital trajectories are changed, and again, a bit of terminology, trajectory is essentially the direction in which an object is heading and where you predict it's going to land based on its motion. And so, you know, it would take a minuscule force. Let's say you have an asteroid that's actually heading straight for Earth and it passes through a Lagrange point, and that puts a deflection of, a few feet per second per meter squared or something like that. And so over the vast distance that it has to travel from that point to the Earth, it will have deflected sufficiently to actually miss the Earth altogether. Or the opposite could happen.
Of course, yeah. It's got its own scary and really interesting scenarios which can theoretically build up. So Naman, one question to you on this now. You had we've talked about the JWST and where it is, right? And the reason why it's at L2 is basically a point which is outside the it's away from the it's not in between the two bodies. On the other hand, L1 is in between the two bodies, right? So L1 is going to get back to the news, at least in India, with the launch of Aditya, the solar mission, which is going to come up. And L1 already has L1 is a good point of observation of the sun because it already has certain solar observation satellites which are already there. So could you just tell a little bit about Aditya? I mean, when it's coming, what's the story? And that's going to be big news in India, at least.
So Aditya L1 mission is designed by ISRO, and it will main aim of Aditya L1 is studying the sun. So why do we study the sun? There are many mysteries with the celestial body which we call sun, and if we do solve that, we can know like when will the sun die or when will it run out of fuel and many other mysteries. So studying the sun is like an important thing. Also, Aditya L1 will directly.
So, Naman.
Yes, sir.
There's a couple of other important points that you missed. So this is just because you didn't talk about them. I'm sorry if you're going to talk about them later, but it's also important to talk about space weather. And so what is space weather? It's essentially the stream of particles that move from the sun away and out of the solar system. And these particles is essentially what gives life to our planet. And so changes to the surface of the sun, such as sunspots, coronal mass ejection events, where, particles of the sun forcefully are pushed out. And this results in a large release of radiation. And so this matters a lot to human beings and life on Earth and our technology, our satellites, our spacecraft, the safety of human beings. What they're essentially trying to do is understand how the sun's cycles work, what phases it goes through, and how can we predict events that occur on the sun's surface that have the potential to disrupt or damage life on Earth.
Yes, sir.
So I'm assuming in this kind of a structure, the satellites which are placed at L1, which is in between the Earth and the sun, one side of the satellite always faces the sun and it's uninterrupted by the Earth, right? That's the whole point of it.
Yes.
It's not going to ever be covered by the Earth. So does it mean that you have all the equipment relays on the back side and the front side is the sensors which actually study the sun? Is that how it is?
Might be. I don't have much insight on this, but yep, it might be like the communications would be on the back side and the front side would study the sun.
Yeah. And the reason for that is because radio communications require line of sight.
Correct.
That is to say, you want to be facing the object you want to communicate with. You don't want to be going around. That's really difficult to do.
You'd have some crazy temperature deltas here, right? The front
yes,
and the back,
shielding.
Which you saw with James Webb, but this is even closer. I don't know how much significance that distance is, but it's still fairly
These satellites are very heavily shielded, and their optics, you know, their apertures tend to be incredibly tiny as well, or depending on the requirements. And, you know, it's a tour de force of engineering. A lot of different bodies of knowledge have to come together in order to be able to create successful spacecraft like this. I mean, Aditya, I actually haven't read about this mission. This is the first time hearing about it. But there are actual solar observatories, you know, SOHO and stuff. And you can actually search for these things.
Yeah.
And you can see near real time, almost live images of the sun taken from an L1 point. But again, this is interesting because if you consider what the James Webb Space Telescope is designed to do, which is to essentially detect infrared. So it's an infrared observatory, right? And the sun is the biggest source of infrared in our solar system. Like, it's literally like shining a torch into someone's eyes.
Correct.
Only a million times, bazillion times worse.
Yeah. That's why we see a lot of shielding on the James Webb Space Telescope. This SOHO and Solar Dynamic Observatory that we're just talking about, they're looking at the sun all the time. So that is one aspect of this point. And these points are stable, but they're stable dynamically. So the object, if tries to roll away from there, it will be pulled back there. So that is there. So for example, this James Webb Space Telescope is not exactly sitting in the point. It is a kind of a halo orbit. And there are correction system is there to keep it there. Yeah. So and nothing is stable in the universe. Everything changes and moves. Planetary orbit decays or planet escape. Like moon is escaping us. So we have to do something to keep moon in the proper orbit if we want to keep moon there. So the result of that is after some time, there won't be total solar eclipse. There will be only annular eclipses. Sometime in far future,
Amitabh, just imagine, right? Like someone just heard you say that we have to do something to keep the moon in orbit. And let's say they don't hear any further from this. They're going to start to believe that, there's rocket engines on the back of the moon and there's like people there.
No. There's some very interesting technology. You can sometime talk about that. Like say the asteroid's orbit changes all the time. And this effect caused by the solar radiation falling on the asteroid, then it radiated away. So the asteroid orbits are unstable because of that. Of course, interaction from other bodies. So like say all other bodies affecting each other, that is one factor. But the solar radiation causes this change. So we might find some giant reflector to pour energy on the moon to keep in the orbit where we want. Okay. So like that way we will change orbits of rogue asteroid going to hit Earth in future. So we can have some kind of, say, big reflector focusing on asteroid, then plasma ejected, becoming jet. So like that. Yeah.
That was, I think, one of the theories they tried. They floated along with the impactor that recently proved that it is possible to deflect an asteroid. So... Again, interesting stuff, but I think we're going to see solar sails possibly being used for...
Yeah, solar sail, interesting idea.
Yeah, very interesting technology. Also, I think China was also planning something like this, where they were planning on sending a giant reflector into orbit, and then they would basically beam sunlight directly onto mainland China. And I think they were going to do this as a small-level test. So
why
at
the
night
hell?
Time,
they want to do that? They don't want night?
No, so what they want to do is like create a low grade lighting in the sky so they don't have to spend money on street lights and that kind of stuff. I don't know what their idea is. Bad idea, but it's an idea.
This is really, really bad. I like killing all the sparrows to save
exactly,
the
yes. You're going to be messing with the circadian cycles.
Similarly, very, very bad idea. If we do that, all the animal life will be disturbed. We won't be able to sleep.
So, but I think, Amitabh, you have to consider the other possibility. Like, this is just a proof of concept. The real use for these sort of technologies might be to, say, colonize Europa, to get sunlight into deeper areas of the planet for habitation and that kind of stuff.
Very well on Earth also. We can create some kind of shield to stop global warming. We can reduce the amount of the solar radiation falling on Earth. There can be huge shield. They can generate power there and same time shield Earth. So you can cut down, say, 20% solar radiation, 30% solar radiation.
That would be massive. That would probably put us in an ice age. I think it would be something far more subtle.
We don't want ice age. We don't want, like, Earth to turn to Venus. So we can have some kind of thing. So, say, compensate
for that.
But this
is a fantastic application of the L1 itself, right? It's actually something that's permanently
so we can have some kind of shield placed there, or shield not totally opaque. Yeah. There's a semi-transparent shield is there. So cut down the amount of how much you want to cut down. You can cut down the radiation, that much radiation. So to compensate for the global warming, doing by they're putting the greenhouse gases in atmosphere.
Yep. And so also the first segment of the human Dyson sphere.
No, so but speaking Dyson of China, still, I think there's
I'm very skeptical about that. Will it be stable? A sphere surrounding shell around that, will it be stable?
No, I don't think so. It will
this
move.
Is just because,
again, you have to consider. No, yeah, even at so L1.
So it may not be a rigid sphere. It not be rigid sphere. This all this satellite, which creating this Dyson sphere, they are orbiting around us. But again, we have to find a stable orbit for them.
But okay. If you consider, say, deploying a massive shield or an umbrella-like structure to shield the Earth from sunlight, then essentially you are also creating a giant solar sail. So there will be a net positive force pushing it out of the Lagrange point, and you would need to counteract that with thrusters or something.
So I don't know if Lagrangian points will be enough that much kind of play to keep it.
Possibly
like
not. You would definitely need to add a net thrust on the opposite end to counteract the force from the solar wind.
Yeah.
So one more point. I mean, actually, this you mentioned China. So that there's something which I just remembered, which I remember reading about Lagrange points some time ago. We are talking about the Earth Sun system and the Lagrange points, which are involving these two bodies, right? And the third body being the satellite. So there's the Earth Moon Lagrange system also, where you have satellites deployed in the L2 L1 position L2 position of the moon. And this was done by China. China, by the way, is, as most of us know, China is busy mining helium-3 on the dark side of the moon. And to communicate with the lunar landers there, they have deployed a spacecraft which is on the L2 point of the moon. So it's on the other side. And from there, it relays communication to those satellites. And that was a fascinating application of L2 I saw on the moon, which I didn't know till now.
But you see, JWST is actually on L2 as well, because it needs to be away from the sun. It needs to be facing away, and it needs to be shielded from all that infrared radiation. That's
no, so that is the L2 of the Earth, right? This is the L2 of the sun-Earth system. This, the Chinese satellite which I was talking about was the L2 of the Earth-Moon system.
Earth-Moon system, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the L2 of the Earth Sun system.
Earth Sun, yeah. So we've started capitalizing on these kind of systems on other bodies also now. So yeah, Naman, you were saying something?
No, I was just saying that JWST is like in the L2 of the Earth Sun, not the Earth Moon.
Yeah, and I think a lot more missions should be, I mean, I'm guessing they are going to be planned on these things. At least they're going to be more significant for us now that we've understood these things, especially with JWST's launch, right? So stuff like what you were saying now, the solar shield, which could potentially help in reducing Earth's exposure to the sun, or what China's done with the Keqiao satellite, where it's basically communicating on the other side. And that could at least, in continuation with our conversation last time with the Artemis story and all that, I think that's all these things are going to become way more significant than what they were till now. So that's clearly a milestone in, space exploration.
Absolutely. And I think what's going to be very interesting is the orbit that NASA has chosen for the Lunar Gateway. And I think maybe we could do an entire circle just discussing that and how crazy that is.
Yeah. Of course. Yeah. So, yeah. So, Satyam is here. Satyam, do you want to add anything on this? It's been a fascinating conversation. I think Satyam's not useful. So, yeah. So, now the thing which I wanted to ask a little further. Sorry, Satyam. Your audio is breaking. All right. I think we'll have to come back. So
black hole.
Sorry,
I think he needs to listen to one of the recordings. Satyam, there was a circle a few weeks ago about black holes. Have a look at that; you'll find it in the channel.
They're all there on the record, Satyam. We had discussed black holes last week, 2 weeks ago, I think. So it was another fascinating topic. So yeah, so now coming back to this, I think we are looking forward to, I don't know whether there's been anything planned, any other, any reference in sci-fi that you have come across for these things, because this is something which I've never heard of before till, you know, I started reading up about the JWST. I'm asking this to you, Mo, because you're the sci-fi geek here.
I'm sure I have come across the name.
Yeah.
Not so much in science fiction, I not read much about Langdon point in any science fiction. Not much about that. Yeah, but very interesting thing that the story there, the ship going to fall into a star, and there's no fuel left to escape. So they have come up very interesting. And ship was a very, say, two mass on a long, say, kind of a connector. And they can be brought together and received away. So that is a very interesting story. I don't know if it has something to do with this Langevin kind of gravitational mathematics. So, and then they are pulled together and expanded. That's how our heroes escaped from the falling into a star.
Yeah.
I'll just find out. I think Asimov's fiction.
Yes, exactly. That's there. I think there were mentions of Lagrange orbits in a few Star Trek Next Generation episodes as well. Okay. And they've actually utilized the Lagrange effect to essentially maintain the position of their starship after it was damaged. So, you know, there are references to this sort of orbital mechanics in science fiction, and it does make extensive use of it. However, if you guys, obviously, everyone here on this channel, even the listeners, they're obviously interested in space. So, you know, the guy who wrote The Martian, Andy Weir, he's written a bunch of other books. There's one called Artemis. It's about the moon. It's about a lunar colony on the moon. And another one called Project Hail Mary. I highly recommend these books. Very entertaining, very brainy science fiction. That's also, you know, based on actual facts. So you will actually learn something by reading these as well. So give it a go. Yeah. Project Hail Mary or Artemis by Andy Weir.
I concur on both counts, yeah. Yes. So I think this is a conversation on the Lagrange points, which we could develop into a lot of other conversations in future. So we'll wrap it up now. Naman, any last words?
I want to float an idea for next conversation. Yeah. Okay, the astronomer is a villain in science fiction.
Not bad. I think we should do that.
I'll talk about that time. So find out villain, astronomer as a villain.